Hi everyone, welcome to the Radical Truth Podcast with Kelly Stewart, where I will leave no stone unturned and to reveal universal truths, empowering people to live their best lives. Come and be a fly on the wall and eavesdrop on authentic conversations, and I will dive deep into the rabbit hole of universal consciousness and being human. And today I have Kerry Lake. And I'm just going to hand it over to Kerry to actually introduce like who she is, because I understand we had a quick conversation before this, and I understand how we want to try and put people into a box, but sometimes we can't with just one label. So it's actually better for Kerry to introduce herself. So Kerry, do you want to tell us about yourself and welcome to my podcast?
Hey, Kelly, thank you so much. Yes, and thanks for the space. People do try to find a box for me to fit in, to make it a little more comfortable. And so when people ask, you know, what do you do or who are you? I'll just tell them, well, I'm basically a highly functioning human that has kind of a lot of awareness on how my systems function. So I go through life and enjoy myself and do my best to have a really beautiful relationship with love and watch that unfold.
Oh, that's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Like being present in the moment to yourself and being authentic in who you are, which is perfect because this is exactly what I want to people to be, as opposed to trying to be something else or to fit into some particular label. Yeah. So you mentioned love. Yeah. Let's dive into that rabbit hole, you know, like,
perfect.
Yeah. I heard something the other day which I thought was quite profound and beautiful, that love has no agenda.
Mm. Yeah. And also consider it, love has no opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. For that's the way that I've always like had the construct of it, that love doesn't have an opposite. It's actually a synthesis of complementary opposites. So it's all entangled of all things. So love is the universal, what would you say, like the universal construct, really?
I like the words that work for me are to say that love is the space within which all else exists. Love is the space where everything happens. It excludes nothing. So even the things that are, you know, uncomfortable or challenging or absolutely confusing why they would ever exist in the first place, they're still happening within the field of love, the space from which creation comes. And really the organizing principle for creation beyond what humans can cognitize.
So it's abstract in some kind of way of thinking. And it is difficult for people to get their head around that particular component, that it's all encompassing, you know, it actually holds all aspects of every trait expression known to humanity. And that does include like the challenging components, like the pain, the fear, you know, some people call it the darkness or the depression, and love does not exclude that. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, you look at pain and it is going back to the way human linear thinking likes to think in terms of boxes and labels and terminologies, just because it makes it easy. You know, it linearizing things works for the data collector, you know, the mind, the data processor, and that's all good. So the fun part is when we stop expecting the mind to understand and grasp, it's not the mind's job. That's where the body comes in, because it is the experience of love that can be recognized rather than the definition of love to be articulated. Mm-hmm. So even when there is pain, say, you know, your puppy dog dies. I mean, whose idea was it that dogs should have a finite lifespan to begin with? I mean, that's messed up if you ask me. But the body ends, but the love continues. So even when, I mean, my dog Bernie, he was with me for 14 years and he basically parented me. He was the being on the planet who was there for me no matter what, even when I was not being very nice. I still felt love in his presence. And that's me feeling love. That's not just my mind, you know, justifying that the dog exists, therefore love exists. I mean, that's very mental and understandable. That's how the mind does it. But even when I was, you know, turning myself inside out, trying to figure out how to be in a body and actually, like, you know, function, I still felt love, which was the reason why, even on the worst day, where I would literally be driving around looking for a way to not be in a body anymore, I would feel the love for Bernie. Like, mm-hmm. Bernie would come to my heart and the love would expand through the pain. And through my heart, I would hear, just come home. And so what did I do? I went home and I snuggled with Bernie, right?
Yeah.
Love is the space within which all of that exists and can be experienced. And it really comes down to, will you choose fear or will you choose love? Will you choose, the fear will always be an option as well. The fear will always be an option for, you know, I can't label this, I can't control this. And that'll always be there, but it's very, 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 very small compared to the love that is constantly embracing, that can constantly and forever be experienced.
And love is, fear is actually encompassed in love too as well. You know, like, it does have like a primal purpose to bring us home to our body. And
yeah. Very good at that.
Yeah. It says, hey, don't forget the body here, right? Like, come out of it. Like, there is this sensory component within us, you know, like, we cannot be separated from our body, because in our existential form, we can't actually leave our body behind. But, you know, I see this a lot in my clients, is that there is a separation of mind and body that starts to occur. And this is where disease or illness starts to actually show up. They are just feedback loops or feedback mechanisms to bring people home to the physical aspects of themselves, to remind themselves that they cannot ignore the physical part or ignore themselves, right?
So, well, absolutely. And it's like a little ding, ding, ding. Hey, remember who you are. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's the uncomfortable experience that gets our attention.
You know? Absolutely. And that to me is like the beauty or the service of pain or fear, is providing us that opportunity for that. And it's not to negate it or avoid it, which is what we're conditioned to do, but to actually honor it, which is true love, and allow it to be as it is. Mm-hmm. And look at the purpose behind it. Like, what is it actually providing you in terms of wisdom as such? And I know you and I like to actually go off in a little bit more sort of let's just say metaphysical aspect, right? And we can add a bit of physics and science to it too as well. Mm-hmm. Is that you know, we have a matter and antimatter, and our body is the matter that actually holds us or anchors us in our existential form to the earth, to be human, to have the human experience. But yet, you know, we tend to want to actually go disassociate out, you know, into antimatter and play in the spirit world. You know, we become separate in form, right? So, which is where, like I say, I start to actually notice a lot of disease and illness or depressions showing up in people. Now, you and I have this commonality, which I want to dive deep into, and I don't want to hold it out, is that we both work with horses, And we see the aspect, well, I can see the aspect of the horse and what that actually provides as a feedback mechanism, like to the person when they start to disassociate from themselves. Mm-hmm. And I call it that the horse starts to actually express the repressions or the suppressions that are in the person. Mm-hmm. And that is which is unconscious to them. Yes. And so they have actually pushed that deeper within themselves, which is a disassociation still from self, but it's actually still permeating through the cellular system within them. And the horses, when we put them in the space of the horse starts to express these particular, expressions that are suppressed within the human. And I love that component because they become the non-biased feedback loop to them. They can see it in real time. And, they have a visual on it to what's being expressed.
Yeah. Oh, yes, exactly. It's being expressed outside of the person mm-hmm. themselves. So they can, from a mental state, observe mm-hmm. something just changed. That horse's behavior just changed. There's something to notice there. There's so much conditioning in humanity, like you said, to repress or ignore or run away from sensations in the body. And those, the dissociations that the word I like is the disharmonies that we experience in our body as pain or emotional disruption or whatever. There is so much cultural conditioning to run away or make it stop, take a pill, make it go away, numb it, change it, control it. And when you're with the horses, you're there and you take yourself to the horses to listen in this way. There is no controlling what the horse shares with you, what the mm-hmm. horse shows you. And often in that, the space with them, in the light of that non-bias, that absence of judgment that they offer, that place of true love that has no need for you to be something other than you are, that's when it actually becomes okay to look at the disharmony, the dysfunction, the disassociation, the place where your true consciousness has left your physical form, either been given away, taken away, avoided, knocked out, whatever, that the horses offer that beautiful space of non-bias. And it is so harmonized with this might take some drawing out, but it's so harmonized with the way nature organizes itself that even a human who is so controlled, so repressed, so scared, so disassociated, even that kind of person will innately sense the presence of a horse showing up saying, well, there you are, and here's how it feels. You don't really even need your mind to have that experience. You know, you don't have to noodle it through. You don't have to think about it or process it or label it. You put yourself next to a horse and you're going to feel yourself. And from there, it's whether or not you're willing to acknowledge the experience and dive deeper into it and really welcome it.
That, yes, yeah, totally. And the beauty of the horse is that it helps a person come back to a state of presence within themselves.
Yes.
To really, really feel what's going on because the horses, that's how they feel. That's how they communicate is through only through the sensory perceptions, right? You know, they still do, communicate through a little bit of sound or voice, but not like we communicate with each other. Their whole body language is the way that they communicate to each other in the herd situation. And mm-hmm. once you enter that field with the animal, with the horse, you become part of that herd with them. So as I love the fact that you say, it does bring a human back to that innate sense of self, that sensitivity that we all have within us, and coming back to the presence of that. And awakening that again, because it is something that I see quite a bit in many different situations is I feel that humans have lost that ability of really connecting into what their sensory perception is actually revealing to them, even when they're in amongst other people. And, you know, the horses are unconditionally providing you for that. And they do bring you back to that innately as well to get you to, hey, like check in, and you become more aware of your movements. Well, for some people I've seen, no, they don't, but until they actually.
We're all in our own state, right?
Yeah, that's it. Until they get the feedback, you know, like
Exactly. And that's where the beauty of linearizing it really comes in, you know, because some people will stand there and go, I feel nothing. You know, even though you and I might be watching all of these energetic changes going on, they may consciously have no way to recognize that the movement of energy is actually information in their senses, you know, because maybe early on they're conscious plugged into the unconscious that I will never let myself become aware of that again. Right. The biggest difference that I see and I'd love to hear your response to this, because the words, you know, words. But the biggest difference that I see between human consciousness and non-human consciousness is humans have this ability to deceive ourselves about our own nature. We have this ability to create the suggestion that we are something other than our presence actually shares. Animals, the animal kingdom, trees are certainly not, you know, pine trees not trying to be a palm tree. This is just pretty self-evident, right? Yeah. And horses and animals don't have a consciousness where they're trying to, you know, try on being something other than they are. A bay horse is not trying to be a paint horse because maybe the paint horse is going to be fed earlier, or the humans think he's prettier so that they'll take that one out of the barn. That is like a does not compute sort of a thought in the animal kingdom, in the natural world. But humans have this amazing, unique capacity to consider that we might be something other than we are. And when we choose that path of something other than we are, this is where it gets fun. We have a name for that and we call it free will. And we put it up on this big fat pedestal. Like, don't take away my free will. I am allowed to choose who I am. And the answer is yes, you are. Love says, yes, you are allowed to do that. Have a blast and you will always be loved. Mm-hmm. But the beauty of horses is, and animals really, but horses, for thousands of reasons, are so nourishing for humanity. But that presence of horses, like, it activates, it lights up, it reignites that part of humanity that has no need to be anything other than we are. And sometimes spontaneously, sometimes with assistance, an individual can consciously, cognitively recognize the felt experience of their own presence. And in that moment of consciously recognizing, oh my God, that feeling, that's what presence is. Yes. Boom. You just closed a loop. And that person just had a felt experience that they can't unfeel.
Exactly.
And that's the beauty.
I think, you know, in essence of that, you know, humans, as we look at our different form of consciousness that we do have in terms of our brain capacity, you know, we have a prefrontal cortex that is, you know, potentially labeled as the higher mind, and the ability to cognitize in terms of reason and to forward planning, to strategize, et cetera, et cetera. And other animals have not that level of consciousness. They, you know, only probably go to, you know, hippocampus and the limbic system. And so there is a difference in species in terms of that. But us as a human being, we have the ability to recognize those differences. And this is what I love about the beauty of the animal kingdom is we can really learn a lot about ourselves, like from the animal nature within us, which we cannot deny within ourselves, right? And it does bring you back to a state of presence. And I love the fact that you say, like a, you know, like a horse is trying not to be, you know, a cow, or it's not trying to be.
Right. Oh, keep going.
I should take that back, you know, because I watched at Amanda's ranch, you know, there's a mini horse that we have, a little dwarf horse, and he hangs out with a cow, and you know, and so they sort of have this play effect that's going on, you know, and people could say, well, you know, he's trying to be a cow and that cow's trying to be a horse. But really, when you look at the expressions of them together, they are still being in their true essence of the being of or the species that they are, right? You know, the little horse is still playing like a little horse, and the cow is still playing like a cow plays, right? So there is these innate differences, but they're not judging each other as different, right?
One is better. Like, it's better to be a cow. Oh, no, it's better to be a little dwarf miniature. No.
Exactly. So what we tend to see in the human realm is these subordinations to these infatuations of judgments against other people. You know, I see that people tend to put other people on a pedestal. They want to look up to be more like them. So these judgments become geopositional in nature. They either look up or they look down. And so therefore they're disassociating or separating sentiments of themselves, trying to be something that they are not, right? They're either trying to avoid something that they don't like in another person, and they don't want to take that on and into themselves because they can't see where they already have it, but it's just in another form. Or they think, oh my God, I'd like to be like that person because I don't have what they have. Yes. And, you know, and again, they're trying to import something into themselves that they think that they don't have. But in essence, they have everything in nature within them to be able to construct the life that is innate to them. Just as we see like in the herd situation, like with horses, we do see hierarchical structure actually taking place in terms of leadership, you know, and that becomes back to a self-organizing system that creates harmonious balance within that system. And it, in essence, it's still the same in humanity that is actually occurring, but we have the ability to cognitize that and have an awareness to that, to bring it back to, well, okay, where is it that if I'm looking to actually import something that I perceive somebody else does have outside of me, where is it within me? Because it's just bringing us back to consciousness to have a look for that. And to see, okay, there it is, but it's just in my form, you know. And then you can just go about being the human that you are, you know, not trying to be anything other than that.
The sticky part in there, though, is because people have been so conditioned to avoid recognizing what they are, the harmony is very quickly lost. You know, nature and the animal kingdom outside of human management does harmonize itself. Harmony is not the absence of disharmony. Harmony also includes disharmony, but there is always a bigger harmony, bringing a disharmony into a greater harmony. And this is the priority of the animal kingdom and nature, not because they're thinking about it, not because they're cognitizing it, but because they can feel it. Humanity as well has the capacity to feel and prioritize that same sense. But the discord among humanity that is absolutely fueled by the judgments that you're saying, that's like, you want to simplify it, that's the only thing in the way, is the judgment that something should be different than it is. The discord in the application of judgments is the variance of priority, because humans can decide this is more important. It's more important to, you know, be a rock star than it is a scientist. So boom, that just organized their sense of priority. It organizes how they walk through the world, how they relate and identify with their experience, with their judgments, with what they see, with who they put up on a pedestal. And that affects your physical felt experience. Because if you bounce up on something that does not seem to align with your priority, that may feel, air quotes, bad. And so you would not choose it again. When in fact, it might be your innate heart saying, whoa, dude, don't go in that direction because that's not working for us. But the way the body communicated that was discomfort. And so there's so much education to provide people to reorganize awareness and simplify people's capacity to recognize sensory and intuitive information without judgment, to reconnect them with their innate ability to sense that harmony that actually is true to their innate presence, that will move them through the world with an open heart in harmony with nature, without denying the fact that, you know, we like sleeping in beds with roofs over our heads and drinking coffee as much as we want. Hypothetically speaking, right?
drinking coffee and awakening ourselves with those stimulants. Yes.
Just because I enjoy it. Yeah. And croissants. I mean, come on. You know,
it becomes a connection to what I love the word priority, your highest priority, or what's innate to your values, right? And what you value the most, what you value the least.
What your values innate to. Yes. Like, we got to put that one on its head, because you can decide you value something that may have nothing to do with your heart. That's going back into the mind and the arrogance of, you know, our capacity to decide our nature rather than relax and discover and receive and feel and be embraced by our nature. Sorry for interrupting, but apparently I had to say it.
That was a download. Yeah, this is an interesting conversation, because like innateness in terms of priorities or values is most people don't really understand or have the cognition or really the feeling behind what values are. To me, there's two essences of values, right? There's universal values, which are based off survival, which we all have within us as a human, the animalistic nature that we're going to our body already knows how to do that. That's really just its job, to stay alive, right? And so those universal values are going to be the construct that we actually existentially live by. But then we have, axiology, which is attached to like meaning and purpose, which is teleology. And we're conditioned in a way to believe that we have to have some kind of purpose or meaning in our lives to make our lives meaningful.
Right.
And when we can derive the meaning and link anything that is actually occurring to us, not to us, but actually for us, in relationary to what our innate purpose is or authentic purpose is, then I find that we can become more present with life, and we're able to sustain multiple challenges as they are actually occurring, because we can then see how it's serving us in a way. And going back to nature, nature abhors a vacuum as such, like there is challenges within anything that does occur. And if we, I spent a bit of time actually researching the wildlife and the environment in Africa, and you can see within that system, there's challenges that occur. But in the innate components of, say, like the zebra, you know, those challenges have to occur to actually maintain the homeostasis of that herd situation.
Right.
And if there wasn't any of those challenges that were there, and, you know, then nature's going to create the challenges for it to create the maintenance of that species. I hope that made sense, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where I see, like, nature abhors a vacuum. It actually automatically creates a balance ecosystem, no matter what we do within it. Mm-hmm. We're just playing a part, like in the role of the universal order as such. And you know,
definitely a pretty big part, I'd say. You know, human consciousness, because we have this unique capacity to think abstractly and to create connections between things that go beyond survival, right? That capacity goes right back into, call it universal mind, call it the whole, right? Yeah. Consciousness really does alter matter. And when you are aware of your consciousness, you can actually watch matter move around. So to say that humanity is just a part in all of this is actually, it's only just kind of almost touching the surface with your fingertip, mm-hmm. you know, because the truth is we are here as an aspect of creator consciousness. We have this capacity to consider, you know, this cooked meat tastes pretty good, but I'd really like to be able to flip it over and cook it on the other side. What would do that? Oh, I'd need something flat to do that. You know, it's creating tools, but it's conceiving of things that have never existed before. That's my point. And that is, and then to actually take the action and make a decision that having it is better than not having it. That's where things really get interesting. Mm-hmm. And where humanity plays an enormous part in the harmony of nature. And it's, you know, gone to quite an extreme at this point on our planet, to where, you know, humanity's creations are creating a pretty profound disharmony with the way nature would run things, right? So, you know, on one hand, we may feel and calculate that one person does not make a difference, but the truth is every single person has an equal difference, makes an equal difference just by recognizing and acknowledging their own awareness.
Beautiful.
I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. It totally did make sense. You know, I was just contemplating while you were speaking, being present to that. Each person does make a difference to the collective whole, the collective consciousness. And do we know what the end purpose is, the end game is for us? No, not really. You know, that's the unknown. We can only have an opinion on that, you know. And then each human's opinions are actually based off what they value the most or the least, you know. And
how it makes them feel, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, how it does make them feel. And is that right or wrong? No, it's not. I don't believe that there is right or wrong. It just is as it is.
Yeah.
I was having a conversation with a girl in the office here yesterday who's a conservationist, and she was talking about, you know, because I'm in Australia at the moment, I was asking her questions about, like, what's happening post the fires that we had down here in Australia.
Yeah.
And she said, well, you know, we're in a discussion with the politicians around agriculture, and so, you know, agriculture is actually seen as a higher need than, you know, reforestation, to the devastation that actually did occur. Now, so then you have a values conflict that starts to actually come into play, right?
Absolutely.
And yeah, so this is where, you know, it becomes for and against. Who do you stand for? What do you stand with? Whereas actually I prefer to actually dance in the middle, right? So I threw in a few questions. Do you think that nature was actually trying to maintain a balance because of the overprotection of the forestry that was happening here in Australia? Mm-hmm. And she looked at me and it was like, what? And I said, well, because the forestry had become so dense in in foliage and like the overpopulation of animals, you know, that because of the overprotection, that nature had to come in to bring it back to a state of balance, right? So could, is there any way possible that you could look at that the agriculture is actually maintaining a balance as long as there's a person or somebody that has the ability to consciously actually see how we could actually create that balance from a universal natural aspect. And I wrote something about that when that was happening, like it's on my Facebook page, and I got quite challenged by that because of people's precept of what they're attached to in terms of their valueception preferences.
Yeah. The reason I wanted to hop in there is there's a little word shift I want to offer. Your question is it wasn't even the question. You were saying, provided there is somebody with the consciousness to see how we might be able to create that balance. Mm-hmm. And the word shift I would offer is instead of create, put in perceive.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's one of the things that humans do when we see like something that is a puzzle that we'd like to address. The puzzle worker will say, how do I create the solution, when really the solution is already going to be evident. It's whether or not we're able to perceive and the solution is not always one answer. The solution may be being willing and able to sense the movement that wants to happen rather than the outcome. Operating by priorities is about movement rather than outcomes. It's where's my next move rather than how do I fix the problem or what is the fix to the problem, right? And that when you said that, it's so strong in me because I think part of the conflicts that humans have with one another is everybody's trying to be right, understandably, because of their values, and they get to be right. You know, if somebody says this is really important, you're right, it is very important, and so is this important. Mm-hmm. And it comes down to you know, can we come to a place of common priority where all of our uniqueness and brilliance can be in motion in a common direction rather than battling for whose solution is the correct one.
Yeah. And that is perceptional. And, yes, you know, perceptional takes human being on this planet, you know, in their biases and what they're actually attached to.
And their beliefs. It takes a lot of self-awareness, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
And honoring each person as an individual and who they are.
Yes.
And I guess, you know, the law of a risk escalation is at play, you know, which is based on nature and the duality of nature. And we can say that love, we go back to the premise that love has no opposite, right? And that's universal order, because the synthesis and synchronicity of opposites is actually entangled within that just one construct.
Isn't it fun?
But it also having... This is what I love about it, is having the awareness in each moment that you're perceiving, you know, a judgment which can be labeled as an absolutism, right or wrong, always or never, or those particular languages that come out, is they're never really separated in space and time. It's only our mind that separates them, right? But when we can have the ability to be able to step into that consciousness, to bring our awareness to see everything is actually entangled, like the pairs of opposites are entangled, no matter where, no matter what, no matter what time, no matter what space you're in.
Yes.
That is the actuality of consciousness at play. But our minds are the ones that actually separate them in space and time, relationary to our perceptions that are attached to our priorities or our values or our belief systems.
Yes, yes. And this is the beautiful, beautiful paradox of the mind looking at all of these cognitive relationships, trying to understand and wrap our mind around that, you know, it is the interplay of opposites within the field that has no bias. It can get really mental, but the paradox, the beauty of it is it's not the mind. This is the part that's not the mind's job, to recognize that experience of non-duality or duality at play within non-duality. It's conceptual until you have the experience, and it is the body that provides the experience, not the cognition of the mind. The mind can think and understand, and yes, and it's fun, and it scratches a lot of itches, and it helps, because for a lot of people, they need to come at it from the direction of understanding before they are available to the experience. But it is so valuable to direct people's awareness to the actual feeling and experience of the body. What changes when you change where you put your awareness? What changes when you stand next to a horse? What changes? Because that is how you can empower people to actually notice the outcome of their perception, to actually recognize their presence in action. It is a sensory experience, it's a sensation. And there is a point in time where it's absolutely appropriate to take command of the mind and give it a job of being aware of the body, and nothing more complicated than that, because that is where that harmony of unity, of perception, of inspiration, of information beyond what I could have thought myself into, it's going to happen when the mind knows it's safe to actually experience the body.
In essence, the two are not really separated. It's only our mind that actually separates the space and time between the mind and the body. And when the two are actually integrated or in fusion, then we can access the intuitive component that actually is still a sensory component. The intuition actually comes in, and that starts to actually guide you. You know, yes. I had an interesting experience. You know, I like to do direct experiences and test stuff out. Yeah. I took a friend of mine into Sedona a couple of years ago, and I went out to the West Fork Trail out there. It's in between these two canyons, and like it's got a creek river through it, and there's like close to like to get across this trail, you have to walk across it like 33 times or something. You have to cross the river and go back in this trail between the canyons. So I wanted to experiment with taking away sight, right? Mm-hmm. And so I went in there, I waited for where there was no moon night because of the canyon walls, like it's completely dark. And I asked him, I said, you up for this? Because I'm gonna no light. And I want to be able to access the intuitive component of the body, like the perceptional, extra perceptional sensory components that we have without relying on our sight, right? And now to do this, we first of all, we had to trust the environment around us. We had to come back into our bodies, and we had to remain completely never present to our mind, but also the feeling body as well too. And what happened was so amazing once we got past all the bullshit of our own fear, we're going to fall over and break our legs, or we're going to get bitten by rattlesnakes, or, you know, attacked by a mountain lion.
Understandable. Yeah.
It is exactly that, you know. The mind and the body became so connected by taking away one of these senses, which is our sight. And I shouldn't say taking it away, because that became even more heightened. I could start to see it a different layer. And I can only equate it to is that intuition started to actually guide the perceptional center, the perceptional senses, or my depth perception senses. Mm. Mm. Of where I could step and how I could actually feel. So I started to realize that the sensory component was able to actually extend even further to actually feel at a greater distance. It's almost like I was in this plasma, you know, that was interconnected, and there was no space and time between my feet and my body to everything that was actually around. Yeah, exactly right. So,
just saying.
Yeah. I totally hear you, sister, on this one, because like this is what happens when we get that in that present state, like with people around us or with horses, is there is no separation even in space, because it's only our perception that there's nothing in this space, but there is, right? Yes.
And you know, a really fun game I like to play about that one is, you know, imagine if you're blindfolded and you walk into a room and there's no sound, nobody's speaking, but it's a room full of angry people.
You can feel that, huh?
Pretty much, right? And now imagine you walk in, same scenario, but you walk into a room of happy people. Would those two rooms feel different? No matter who you are, right? So let's take that sense, the one that would make you, a lot of people go, well, yeah, obviously, right? Because everybody can tell the difference between someone who feels angry and someone who feels happy. Well, most everybody. Mm-hmm. Now, you take the part of yourself that could feel that, or the part of the other people who are emitting happy or angry, right? Does the way they feel stop at the outside of their body?
No.
No. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to pick up on it walking into that room, right? So then you just have to also ask.
Let there be light.
Yeah, that's too bright. you also have to ask, okay, if who they are and how they're feeling is expanded beyond their body, where does it stop? Where does it end?
Now, that's a $54 million question, really, because there is really no answer to that.
Well, why is it that you can have a loved one who might be traveling in Japan and here you're in California, and one evening you just sit bolt up and they come to your mind and you go, oh my God, they're in trouble. And 2 minutes later you get a phone call saying, I'm in trouble, I need help.
Entanglement, quantum entanglement.
Right. But let's take it to sensory language, right? For just for a moment, right? You're aware of it because you felt it, because the part of you that does not end was interacting with the part of them that does not end. And yes, we can call that entanglement, and it is quantum. It's outside time and space, right? And this is all empirically evident when we allow ourselves the experience, right? So I love that you do that and take yourself out, like, to have your own experience. I hope everybody does. That's how I've lived my whole life. You know, I mean, I grew up being told, look everything up. I grew up sort of being conditioned that I'm not supposed to know anything I haven't been taught, like, because I'm just a stupid kid, right? And how you're supposed to know these things. And I'm here I am wanting to teach my mom how to cure her cancer. And all you need to do is take your awareness here and dissolve the emotions and your body will free right up, you know? But no, I didn't have the language and I wasn't supposed to know these things. But everybody has things they know that they haven't been taught. Mm-hmm. It's just not everybody has had the encouragement or the language or the vocabulary or the camaraderie or, you know, whatever combination it is for them to very simply help the mind recognize that that information is valuable.
I love this. It's very similar to the way that I grew up too, is, you know, the expectation of, you know, my mother, my father, you should go off and do this, go get a university degree, you know, and then you become the very thing that those teachers have actually taught you. But, you know, I must have, you know, flipped the bird to that very early age, because like I was bored shitless in school, you know, and it was... And I have had this curiosity within me to be able to go out and have these direct experiences, but also fought with the aspect of, you know, shooting all over myself. Well, perhaps I should have done this and should have done that, right?
Yes, yes.
Which creates the self-judgment on self and the belief system of, you know, when the shit hits the fan, we start to have these self-judgments.
Yes.
And we should have done this, maybe I should do that, et cetera, et cetera. And coming back to that self-sense of knowing of that you do have the information within you, you do have the ability to be able to really step into the curiosity of not just your mind, but your full body consciousness as well, and trust that to actually give you, you know, many more answers than you can get out of a textbook, that's for sure, right?
No doubt.
That's what I love about the horses, you know. For many years, working with starting colts and having the opportunity to work with many horses, is they taught me so much about being present in the moment and feeling what was happening, but not feeling what was happening present in the moment, then getting into your intuition to what was going to occur next potentially, to help redirect that energy into, you know, I like to just call it like a transformation or progression of, you know, learning opportunities for myself and the horse, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I studied with Ray Hunt and Tom Dorrance, and Ray Hunt, I love that guy, you know, as much as he challenged me, because he would let me have the direct experiences. He didn't want to overprotect me. He didn't
like, sure, go ahead, try that.
yeah. You know, like he would just allow things to unfold, because in those moments he knew that they were the best learning opportunities, and he used to say, in the midst of difficulty there is so much opportunity. If you have the awareness to feel it, be in time with it, and then that would create the harmony. He's called feel, timing, and balance.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the feeling is the feeling existential body, the timing is the mind, and the balance is the combination of those two things together. And that in brings in like the intuition. Those that are you familiar with Tom and Ray? They used to use the word spirit, and the other thing they used to say, the other thing will guide you, right? Mm-hmm. Was the spirit. But they refrained from actually using the word spirit throughout their teaching years because of the connotation to, you know, it's a bit woo-woo. But, you know, that really just made so much sense to me, that when you are in that present state and you're allowing yourself to have the direct experience of the opportunity that is being presented to you, then the intuition or the spirit does come into, actually, I call it like the soul connection, comes into to give you the information. And then you have learned that. You have actually, it has become your experience. It's your knowing, right?
Yes. So, you can't unhave that.
No.
Yes. Oh, it's so much fun. It's so beautiful. And this is tickling at my mind, kind of circling back on where you were a little while ago. You were talking about stopping, like trying to be something and not avoiding being something. I was smiling to myself because in my book, I wrote this years ago, a little piece called An Organic Reality.
Mm-hmm.
And in there, an organic reality happens without trying. It's what life looks like when we stop trying to be something and stop trying to avoid being something. So I was just totally smiling because yes. And yeah. It helps that sense of trust and that sense of safety, like going out and giving yourself a direct experience. You've already set yourself up to trust, okay, I'm going to have this experience. You've set yourself up to suspend judgment of it because you made it okay for yourself to walk into it. It's actually helping the mind come out of conflict with itself so that the mind allows the space for this other realm of information, the intuitive, the quantum, the, mm-hmm. the spirit information. And from there, it is the willingness to also not control the experience of the body, to actually let the physical structure relax so that it can vibrate with the frequencies of nature, with the frequencies of your own experience, with the frequencies of your emotions about your experience, but to not identify with the emotion, but simply recognize how it feels. You know, it's quite a journey. And this is, again, back to horses.
Yeah.
It's what horses can assist so profoundly, simply because that is how they live every moment of every day, never trying to be something that they're not. And so like putting yourself in the company of masters, you learn far more than you ever would sitting in a room reading about the master, right? Because there is a transference. There is a harmonizing that happens. And, you know, in the horse-assisted paradigm now, it's often horse-assisted therapy, education, leadership, team building. There's labels, 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 labels. You don't have to be striving towards some outcome or figuring yourself out or, you know, deciding that you're broken and you need therapy in order to actually put yourself in their presence and simply enjoy the experience. You know, it's like just being with them mm-hmm. offers, if you give yourself that experience, you're trusting yourself to put yourself there and saying, okay, I'm going to let it be okay. Maybe even just for 10 seconds to not control what it feels like to, for me to be among these creatures. And that's when you're really welcoming in your own higher consciousness and its own quantum information. You're welcoming in that part of you that is unbiased in love to say, oh, thank you for the window. Here's where we're intending ourselves to go next. And that's when the experience of purpose happens without a definition.
And that's love and gratitude right in that moment, right there where the heart opens.
That's life. That's what life is offering every moment. And again, it's like, don't take my word for it. Go out and have the experience, you know?
And it's available to everybody.
Because you have a body.
Otherwise we wouldn't be talking here at the moment.
I know. It's so much fun.
Exactly. Oh my God, this is so cool. So thank you so much for diving into that. I'm sure that we could go even deeper into aspects that are, you know, way deeper.
Deeper. Any fractal of that, it's a very fractal. You can go anywhere on any of it. So thank you, though. Yes, this has been a blast.
Absolutely. So, you know, maybe potentially we could jump on again and actually we could look into the fractal universe and how it actually does permeate our systems. I'd love to go like diving deep into that realm and that may be, you know, like another level of things, you know.
Yeah.
I just want to take the opportunity, you know, to say thanks to the horses that have actually brought love and gratitude to my heart and to the hearts of many people around the planet, and what horses do actually offer. You know, like I just have a special place in my heart for the horses, and I can see what they've actually bought for me and for the many people that actually, you know, I've actually worked with, that they've worked, not me potentially working with them, because the horses are the ones doing the job, and what they actually do bring for humanity. So people do it that are listening to this, you get an opportunity to spend some time and just be in the space of a horse and really feel into what they can actually bring to you.
Oh man, yeah, that's a whole other show. being in the presence of horses who are living as naturally as possible is very different than just going to a competition barn with horses that are living, you know, in their own individual stalls. They have a, just like humans who grow up in the inner city, have a different presence and a different relationship with life than the beautiful humans who live out in the Kalahari Desert.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, be with horses no matter what, and they will meet you at the highest level of consciousness you're willing to engage.
Mm-hmm.
And being among horses who are welcome to live in as natural a habitat and as natural a harmony as possible is priceless, indescribable. And people will often say horses are the dolphins of the land, because they will see and touch your heart and you will be different.
Yeah, aho sister on that one. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I get drunk just thinking about it and just tuning
yeah.
Bringing those frequencies through. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually getting tears of gratitude, you know, like it's popping in the particular horses that have actually really guided me through the essence of my being, you know. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just have so much gratitude for them. And really, you know, if it wasn't for the horses, I don't think I would have gone down this path that I have found myself along and diving deep into the rabbit hole of, I don't know what you want to call it, you know. I don't think it is ineffable in words. I don't have any words for it. Like, I'm just guided where I just get directed. And it's the horses that started my journey into that, you know, and really understand, like, the connection. It's the connection, the connectivity.
Oh, yeah, there's another whole conversation on connection.
Yeah.
One of the things I really love about our connection is that we have surfed a lot of the same rabbit holes, just, you know, done a lot of similar exploring, but from different directions, just because of our different journeys. Mine started not from waking up at some point later in my life, but from being a kid and having no vocabulary, nobody to talk to, but I could feel all of this. I started from the place of feel without intellectual clarity. Although when you start from feel, intellectual clarity is going to come, I promise. Like, a lot of people think, oh, if I start feeling, I'm gonna be a vegetable. Oh, no, no, it's the opposite. But I love that you and I can play, because we are playing with the same things, looking through different lenses, mm-hmm. and still having common experience throughout. Yeah. And it is so beautiful. That's, to me, that's the amazingness of our humanness, is that we can do these sorts of things and feel the connection and have tears come to our eyes, because that's how beautiful it feels, because the experience is still within our presence.
Beautiful. Well, thank you for experiencing the human experience with me today on this combo. I love it. If people would love to connect with you, Kerry, how could they contact you?
Thank you so much. My website's kerrylake.com, KERRILAKE. That's the easiest way. And but I would encourage you, if you want to connect, email me info@kerrylake.com and have a conversation. And the more we connect, the more opens up and the further we all go. So
absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for spending time with me today. And oh my God, I want to continue this conversation. So we will be doing like part 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Kerry Lake and Kelly Stewart. So thank you guys for listening to the Radical Truth podcast. As I promised that we would leave no stone unturned and head down the rabbit holes of different directions and challenge, you know, different thought paradigms. So hopefully if you found this interesting, stay tuned and listen to the next episodes with Kerry and Kelly, and of any other episodes that you may be actually interested in terms of radical truth and raising human consciousness. Thank you.